Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along.
Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. This is UK Health Radio. Happy Bank Holiday Monday, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the day and you're going to do something exciting. For today's show, I've got just the most amazing guests. I'm not going to spoil the surprise yet. As you know, before we get into our guests and our conversations, I always try to run a little bit of news just to give you some information that you might not have heard. Today's news is actually very relevant to our guest. I'm just going to talk a little bit about Veganuary. So Veganuary was a movement that was started, I think it was possibly about 10 years ago. I'm not sure exactly of the date, but it was a movement that was really to inspire people to look at a more plant-based diet. Veganuary obviously has the word vegan in it. So, of course, vegan is the plant-based movement. Which, if those of you that don't know what it is, and if you've been living on the moon or somewhere off the planet, then you might not. But essentially, it's using products that have not been involved in animals, anything to do with animals. So food, it can be, you know, dairy, obviously meats and fish, et cetera, et cetera. But also it's veganism comes down to clothing. So, you know, a lot of vegans won't wear leather or anything that's been related to animals. And it even goes as far as, you know, if you want to, you know, if you like honey, you would cut honey out of your diet because, of course, it's been made by an insect. So the veganism is a movement. It's actually been growing and growing and growing. But this year was interesting because there was a report made by the Qatar. It's K-A-T-A-R, which is the retail organization. The findings were significant in a sense that what they'd noticed is that the movement in Veganuary had actually dropped very slightly, not a huge amount, but actually in previous years it had grown every year. So why had it dropped? So the answers to their research was that the economy has had a bit of an effect on people making choices around plant-based decisions. And also, and this is the biggest whopping one, and this is what I want to get into the guests, the retailers this year didn't focus on Veganuary as a in-store promotion. You were more likely to see a Cadbury's cream egg promoted than you would have done a plant-based diet. So I think that's significant. Now, what does that tell us? It tells us that the retailers perhaps have speculated on the plant-based movement and not making as much money from it, so therefore have decided to focus on other things, which I think is appalling because we do know that, you know, agriculture, particularly around food, is actually really damaging to the soils, to our health, to lifestyles, and to the ecosystems, to deforestation, etc., etc. So just a little shout out here that if you are a plant-based eater or even a flexitarian, if you're full vegan, Ben, just inspire as many friends and family as you can, just to make those conscious choices and the reasons why. Because I think what's happened is we've probably become a little less noisy about it. And what we need to do is perhaps pick up the noise. So on that note, I am absolutely delighted to be introducing today's guests. Today's guests are, well, firstly, they are, I think influencers is perhaps the correct term to use. They have the most successful vegan show in the world of influence on YouTube and social media all of those environments. They are amazing guys. I happened to be on a panel with them at this year's Fully Charged. We have the Bosch guys here, guys, and I know that many of you will know who the Bosch guys are. So welcome, Ian. Welcome, Henry. Thank you very, very much for joining us. You know what? The first question I really want to ask you is, why Bosch? Well, I mean, I haven't been able to get my head around it. So what's the connection there?
Well, hello, first of all. Thanks for having us. We're very excited to be here. One answer and Ian has another answer. So my answer is Bosch felt for us like... It stood for quick, easy cooking, bish, bash, bosh, get it in a pan, super easy. And it just sounded cool and it sounded like us and it sounded like a brand. So that's my answer for why we went for Bosch.
Yeah,
I love it.
And my answer for it is it's actually a backronym. We were performing a show not so long ago, or actually a couple of years ago now. And the shows that we perform at, basically we're doing cooking demonstrations and we'll do book signings after them. And this lady came up to us with her book, which is actually all gnarled and covered in food, which is exactly as you want a cookbook to be.
Absolutely.
And she said, just wondering about your name. And we're like, okay, go on. She's like, I was just wondering, does it stand for Boys of Sheffield? And we were like, well, no, it didn't. But from this day forth, it shall.
That's brilliant. Yeah. That's brilliant. They always say that the best way to get your fan base is for your fans to come up with your acronym or your title, if you like, for Fan Push. So I'm glad that that's happened for you. Brilliant. Now you guys are mates since what? You were at school together, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. We were.
We're buddies. Known each other since we were about 13 years old. We both went to High Stores School, which is in Sheffield. And we've got the same group of mates as well. You know, we've known each other for decades, but we were kind of living together and working together as flatmates in London about 8 years ago when Ian went vegan, then I went vegan. And then we realized, let's build something out of this because, you know, this is an opportunity for us to try and make the world a better place. And a lot of people will say, don't work with your mates. And I can see why, but I would say that in our case, it's worked really well. And, you know, when you've got a co-founder, you're kind of entering into a marriage with somebody.
Yeah.
And it helps if you know that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not only enter into marriage, you're also giving birth to things constantly, aren't you, together?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I'm sure a lot of women out there will be cringing. You don't even know what it's like to give birth. But yeah, I think...
Not as painful as childbirth.
Ian, is that... Has it been a wild journey for you? I mean, you know, what's that experience been like? Hanging out with a mate, doing what you love, you know, inspiring and educating the world. I mean, it's just like, it must be epic.
Yeah, it's been really, we've been very, very lucky, you know, doing something for work that we're both very, very passionate about. And the work that we do, basically making plant-based food accessible for thousands, if not millions of people all across the world, we believe that that's a really worthwhile way to spend your time. So we've been on a pretty crazy journey, starting out working in Henry's old flat in Holloway, as he mentioned before.
Yeah.
You know, just cooking up dishes on camera, just doing our best to show the world that plant-based food is actually really delicious on social media. The videos blew up. And then it's just been one thing after another. If it's making more social media videos, or if it is writing cookbooks, of which we've now sold a million, or then doing TV stuff. And then we've been lucky enough to travel with our work too, to go and cook plant-based food for other people in other countries. So yeah, it's been a wild ride, but it's been a real joy. And hopefully we're just getting started.
Yeah, good. Glad to hear it. Well, let's go backwards. Let's just wind back a little bit. So I mean, were you both chefs before? I mean, is that a silly question to ask, or were you just foodies?
No. It's a very 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 shrewd question. We weren't trained chefs, so we are and always have been passionate and self-taught home cooks. Even you know, before we started cooking food on camera for Bosch, we would when we were eating meat and stuff, you know, we'd have amazing dishes that we'd cook flat. We had quite a culinary flat that we lived in, whether it was, you know, steak and chips or lasagnas or spaghetti bolognese, or, you know, I had a lovely tapas spread that I always used to put together. Lots of curries would happen, you know, going to the butcher to buy, like, you can just get bones from the butcher for free. So I'd go get bones from the butcher in order to make a lamb Rogan Josh properly authentic. You know, that level of care and attention to cooking existed in our flat. So we really loved cooking. But it did mean at the beginning, when we started cooking videos on Bosch, we had to learn quickly. We had to learn on the job and work it all out. But the thing is, back then, vegan cooking was so new and so novel and so poorly documented that nobody knew how to cook this stuff anyway.
Yeah,
these recipes,
yeah,
online, they're like, you know, we invented 10% of the recipes that we see floating around on TikTok, that vegan food hacks, we invented them and they weren't there before. So I think that now,
I mean, that's amazing, by the way, and hats off to you. There is a personal recipe that my wife makes for me once a year for my birthday. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I mean, you are genuinely legends that have created created a sector, created a genre, created a movement. But how did the, sorry to interrupt you, by the way, but how did you become vegan? Because I was surprised you started the conversation with, you know, the lamb Rogan Josh, which is fantastic, because, you know, most vegans used to eat meat before. I mean, I used to chew on the chicken bones and eat the marrow and the whole thing when I was a kid. So, but what shifted you to becoming vegan? I mean, Ian, maybe you want to start, or I mean, both tell you each story, because it'd be good to hear.
Sure. So at the back end of 2014, I was not living a very healthy lifestyle. So I was eating far too much food, was drinking far too much booze, not doing any exercise, not getting enough sleep, partying far too hard. And
that's London for you, right?
Well, exactly. You know, I think it's the story of many kind of 30-something blokes and ladies indeed would probably be able to tell. But I looked at myself in the mirror and thought, I need to change something here. So my New Year's resolution for 2015 was to give up alcohol for 3 months to clear my head, and then to trial vegetarianism for 3 months to see what happened. And after 1 month of vegetarianism, I was feeling pretty good, lost a bit of weight, felt a little bit fresher, it was enjoying the food that I was eating. Obviously there's a lot of eggs in there, a lot of cheese and stuff. But then over the course of that month of doing vegetarianism, had been exposed to the word vegan by a friend of ours, Adam Biddle. And I thought, oh, I'll give this vegan thing a whirl then. And 1 month into the vegan thing, I felt really good. So it's like loads of weight had dropped off. The hair had got thicker, skin had got clearer, going to sleep really, really easy at night, and then waking up really, really fresh. And wow. Also, there was living safe in the knowledge that the thing that you're doing every day, or the meals that you're choosing to eat three times a day, was very altruistic in nature. So I was like, this is great. And then Adam introduced us to this film called Cowspiracy, and I persuaded Henry to watch Cowspiracy with me, and I'll let him take on from there.
I mean, yeah, I watched that film, and I was always a passionate environmentalist, and at the time, in fact, was looking for something to do with my career, which was reducing climate change. You know, I wanted a purpose-driven career, and I felt frustrated that the government wasn't doing enough to combat climate change. So we watched Cowspiracy, and I went from mocking Ian and his vegan eating to vegan myself overnight. And I think I also felt great, but I just it's not like a light bulb flashed on in my brain, and I no longer saw meat as food for me, because it just wasn't a sustainable way for me to sustain myself and the planet. And how dare I choose to eat this food, which is higher in its carbon footprint, when, you know, climate change is going to affect the poorest nations first. And I didn't like that inequality. I didn't like what that represented. So the decision was super easy.
Nice. What I remember my turning point when I became vegan. It was actually when my daughter, who's now 8, she was born. She kept getting this colic thing that no one really knew what it was. Just wasn't something wasn't agreeing with her. So my wife, amazingly, cut out all the things that she thought she'd cut out of her diet, and then very gently began to feed them back in to see what was causing the reaction. And it was dairy. So as soon as dairy came back in, our daughter, who was a baby, started getting. So we just became vegan in solidarity for her. We were already vegetarian. And I remember the cheese and the butter were really quite tricky to give up, quite difficult. I mean, we had to, we did, because that's what we did. Was there anything that you guys really, really missed at the time? And I'm guessing this is a totally loaded question, because what you guys are brilliant at is making stuff that reminds you of the stuff we all used to eat, right? But what was it that you really missed? Or was there a list?
I think you've hit the nail on the head, which is all of our ideas for recipes come from things that we missed. So you could just look through our cookbooks. I mean, I could say fish and chips, steak and chips, proper like British food. But I think probably the main thing that I missed was convenience. And especially when you travel, it's tough to travel. It's really nice to just walk into a random restaurant where you don't even un can't even read the sign and let that person just feed you anything. And I miss being able to do that.
Yeah,
That's
that's
it.
a nice response. Yeah, I mean, if you're in India, it's not so bad, but if you're in some other places, it can be an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that I missed the most was scrambled egg. So, because scrambled egg is obviously really high in protein and very, very quick and re relatively cheap. So I thought long and hard about how we might recreate scrambled egg. So I came up with a two tofu technique, which is essentially you take a block of firm tofu and you crumble that tofu down to give you the firm bits in a scrambled egg. And then you take a block of silken tofu and you blend that in a blender and you cook them both in a pan with a bit of turmeric, a bit of kala namak. And maybe a little splash of almond milk just to sort of loosen it up. You pop some chives on the top of that, and you pop that on top of some toast, and it is exactly the same. Now, we released that video about 2019. We put it in a book in 2019, and I noticed on social media, not but like 3 or 4 days ago, there is a couple of social media influencers who are claiming that this is a brand new recipe that they have come up with, and it's getting, it's proliferating all over the internet, getting millions of views. But yeah, we don't get any of the response. But hey ho, what we do this for is to put more plants on plate. So I suppose it's a net good thing for the movement.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, mate, that's a compliment. The highest level of compliment is when people start copying you and ripping off your ideas. So take it
Well,
as a wisdom. You've moved into wisdom keeper territory. So
yeah,
that's a, claim it and own it. I
I
would
love
call you,
that.
grandfathers or godfathers on it, but you're quite young to be labelled as that yet. But anyway, pioneers for sure. You know what? I'm a testament to that. I can absolutely back you up, because I've been eating that scrambled tofu in exactly the way that you've just described it for years. Why? Because the one thing I really miss is eggs, right? So my wife, and then when I happened to tell her that you and I were sharing a stage, which we did this year at Fully Charged, my wife turned around to me and went, "Oh my God, you've been eating their recipes for the last 5 years," kind of thing. It's like, and she pulled out the cookbook and she told me, and she said, "You know that Bakewell tart that I make you every birthday?" I was like, "Yes." She said,
Yes.
"That's a Bosch recipe." And I was like, "Oh my God, these guys are not only, cool guys, they are totally infiltrating my life with positivity." So thank you for that.
That
You're
was a
welcome.
pleasure. Thank you very much. And that Bakewell tart recipe that you're talking about there is from our second book, Bish Bash Bosh. And we actually went to Bakewell and made a YouTube video about
Did you?
finding if it's possible to find a vegan Bakewell tart in Bakewell. The answer is a resounding no. So we had to
Yeah.
come and make our own, and we did. And that's the one that you've had for your birthday, which is great.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. I mean, I love the connections around food. I mean, the reason why Bakewell tart is so important to me is, I had a pretty rough childhood when I was young, horrible stepfather around, and the little old lady and the couple that lived across the literally next door to me every Sunday used to pop over the wall some brand, freshly baked Bakewell tarts. And it was
Nice.
like that moment of sanctuary for me every Sunday morning. And it was like, and it's just lived with me ever since. And I was young then. I was like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kind of age. So,
That's lovely. It's so funny how food does that to people, because I bet all of us here have some kind of wonderful memory that is absolutely associated with food. And I bet anybody who's listening to this and anybody who isn't listening to this would also have that. So food is important. We people need to remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have to go to a commercial break, Wise, but this is a perfect moment. But if there are any listeners out there and you've got any of those moments where you think, gosh, yeah, that food has really had an impact on me, do get in contact with us. You can find out the email address on the UK Health Radio website. Pop us an email and we'll make sure that Henry and Ian get it to show some love to them. But we're going to pop to a commercial break. We'll be back very shortly with Ian and Henry from Bosch.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith. We're on Lean Into Clean. This is UK Health Radio. I am here with, so excited about this, with the Bosch guys, with Ian and Henry from Bosch, the vegan, plant-based, amazing influencers, chefs, just, you know, absolutely awesome guys. Now, look, the question I really, really want to ask you is, how did you get into making these videos? Like, what was the inspiration for that? And what nudged you to do that? Were you involved in content creation before, or?
Yes. So my background was all digital marketing, websites, apps, and content. So I had a background in that, and we not only loved cooking, but also, you know, I came with a background in digital content. But we were also in a good moment in history when video was growing quickly on Facebook and then Instagram. And we were just seeing a lot of growth in video, but also these new formats of cooking videos, which were quite immersive, quite focused on the food. You had these top-down angles and these side-on angles.
Oh, yeah, I remember those days. Yeah. And everyone was taking pictures of their food, weren't they? It's like all you'd see on Instagram was food.
That was the moment. So
it was a mad time, yeah.
Yeah, we knew exactly what we were doing, which was we wanted to provide vegan recipes to people. We wanted to, you know, for every meat-focused chicken in a can covered in nachos dripping with cheese and bacon, we wanted a plant-based version of that was just as indulgent and just as shareable, but that was better for the planet and probably healthier for your body as well. So we just started making those videos, and we knew we wanted to build it into a brand. You know, we came up with the name Bosch because we wanted to sell people food as well. We wanted to provide products in supermarkets. We knew that cookbooks were probably likely, but the plan was always, let's start with video, let's build an audience, let's share these amazing recipes with the world, and then take it from there.
Nice. And what blew up first then? Was it YouTube, or was it social media? I mean, was there a game plan, or was it like most people say, this one just took off and therefore we kind of went with that?
The channel that we started on was Facebook, and Facebook was the perfect channel at that time, 8 years ago, because if you remember, there was an awful lot of people who shared content, but it wasn't just sharing content like you do now with maybe one or two people. Back in the day, you'd click the share button and every one of the people that you were friends with on Facebook would see the thing that you just shared. So it was a lot easier to go really, really viral.
The good and, old days.
The good old days, yeah. But to answer the question of the most popular videos right to begin with, the first video that we ever put out was a healthy sushi cake. So it looked really pretty. It was really, really novel, but it also served a purpose because sushi, when you eat a plant-based sushi, is actually quite healthy, but it's quite difficult to do. But if you stack it all up like a Victoria sponge, the ingredients of a sushi, it becomes actually really, really easy to do, a lot easier than actually rolling sushi. So it solved the problem for people who couldn't roll sushi. But then the next thing that blew up was one of Henry's mad ideas. And it was amazing. It was the watermelon Jaeger bomb. And there's a little bit of a story from the first ever shoot that I'm sure Henry can fill you in on.
Yes. Well, so, I mean, it was an incredibly hot day. Incredibly hot weekend, possibly the hottest weekend of the year, in this tiny flat in Islington. This was our first ever shoot, and we'd committed to film 20 videos over the course of 3 days, which is a lot.
That's
if we
a lot,
tried
yeah.
to do that now, we would fail. And we'd got to video number 19. The boys had, we'd all hardly slept. We had these two videographers, me and Ian, and this chef we were working with called Luke, a friend of ours. And by the second to last video, everyone was just ready to go home and sleep. And I said, guys, we've got to do 20. We've got to make it to 20. There's people counting on us. We've said we're going to do 20. I tell you what, let's do the last one and make it an easy one. We'll do a cocktail. So we looked in the shopping basket that we'd wheeled from the supermarket for the food. And there was a watermelon and a melon and some Jägermeister. So lo and behold, the watermelon Jäger bomb was born and subsequently got out 50 million views on Facebook.
I remember seeing that and being totally inspired, actually. And I hadn't even clocked it was you guys. So, wow. Oh, brilliant. I mean, that's just amazing. So, look, I'm going to, as you know, I always ask my guests to come with a couple of songs in their back pocket, songs that are soundtracks to the climate crisis or songs that really mean a lot to you. Ian, if it's all right, we'll go with the song that you've chosen. Just tell us the name of the song, the name of the artist. We'll listen to the song. We'll come back to you and you can tell us why you chose it.
Okay, so the name of the song is It's Time to Burn and the artist is Storm.
Okay, this is It's Time to Burn by Storm. Welcome back. Wow, is that a techno song, Ian?
That is a trance song. And that's
trance.
So that's a song. Shall I just go straight into it and talk to you about that song?
I picked
that song because it's a song that reminds me of my misspent youth first and foremost in the Gatecrasher nightclub in Sheffield, I think it speaks about the climate crisis on a few levels. Obviously it doesn't speak about the climate crisis at all, but when you look at the depth of it, or we start talking about it, so it's by Storm. Okay, and Storms volatile and unpredictable and dangerous, and it feels that we're currently in stormy times when it comes to the climate crisis. So that's the first thing.
Great.
The second
analysis.
Thing is the song is called Time to Burn, and the world literally burns more now than when it did when we were growing up, and that is as a direct result of the climate crisis and the way the human impact on the environment as a whole. So that's two things. The next thing is, I think that the song, as I'm sure the listeners have just realized, is quite punchy and attention grabbing. And I think that, you know, we should be grabbing more attention when it comes to the climate crisis, because if we don't do things to the best of our ability right now, then our children and our children's children are going to look back at our generation and look back with scorn. And think to themselves, why on earth didn't you do more when you had the opportunity? So that's one thing. And also, the genre of the song is trance. And I believe that there's an awful lot of people in the world right now that are in a trance around the climate crisis. And they seem to be just blinkers on, not bothered about like what they eat and the impact that they have on the wider environment. And so there are four reasons that I picked that tune. And I must apologize to all the listeners for subjecting them to that tune for all 3 minutes.
No, I think it's brilliant. I love the philosophy behind it. You know, you've clearly gone deep and thought about that. Thank you, Henry. Is that a typical Ian, you know, character? Is he a deep philosophical kind of guy? I mean, is that where he's at in his space?
Yeah, absolutely. Ian loves to find deep meanings and, you know, interesting juxtapositions of things. You know, a lot of our quirky recipe names come from Ian's creative brain. And he also loves trance music. In fact, we both do, and we both DJ together. So, yes, that is very much expected.
Yeah, nice. I can totally relate. It's funny, I was in the school playground the other day with one of the dads, as you do, hanging out. And we got onto the conversation about music, and we were talking about the Hacienda. And, you know, I used to go to the Hacienda back in the day, and which is, you know, it's legend stuff. When you talk to young kids today about the Hacienda, and I was there. So I remember Gatecrasher. We used to come up north a lot, actually, because I lived in Leicester. So, totally relate to the movement of music. And it's just a shame that whole kind of industry was just kind of shut down, really, wasn't it? It was just all kind of, you know, homogenized and controlled. And but we were there. We were there back in the day.
We were there. We remember.
And if you look at videos of those past times, there is just zero mobile phones. Just people with the music, with their friends in the moment, just going for it. And now, like, I don't think the same is true. Now, if you go to a big rave, it's just that there's more emphasis almost on the visuals behind the DJ than the music that the DJ is actually playing.
Yeah.
And then everyone is with their phones. So different times entirely.
Yeah, completely, completely. I can totally relate to that. I can remember being in queues with hundreds of cars waiting for, you know, somebody to find out where the rave was going to be, and then everyone would drive off and get to. This is in like 1991.
Me too.
The good old days. The good old days. Yeah, no, thank you for that. I'm glad we share that as well as the love of plant-based food. What my wife asked a great question, and I know we've got an article coming up on you guys in our next issue of the My Green Pod magazine. So look out for that, listeners, when you get a chance. It's the World Environment Day issue. Should be coming out on June the 5th. But she asked me to ask you, what has been, if anything, the most trickiest meal that you've tried to plant base up? And you know, have you cracked it, or are you still in the process of doing it?
I think that steak is still tough. So
nobody wants tough steak.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like a piece of cardboard, right? I think, you know, you can get away with a burger. Plant-based burgers are great. Plant-based fish and chips, effortless, scampi, lamb. You can do all of these. But I think the kind of steak in its purest form is relatively hard to replicate. And you can buy plant-based steaks in supermarkets. So you can still have your steak and chips. And they're fine, you know, but they're about a 6 or 7 out of 10, I'd say. Because it's so pure and unfiltered, you taste every bit of difference. So I'm waiting for the proper 3D printed meaty steaky steak, because it's not here yet.
What do you think about this lab grown stuff? I mean, are you, you know, there's no animals involved in it, obviously, is there, apart from the stem? Oh, are you a supporter of it?
I think it's super interesting, and I think both opinions are valid, but I think it absolutely is the solution, one of the solutions that we need. You know, we're still a small percentage of the market with our plant-based meats category, so people are eating meat. So I think for the world to have an option that is meat, that is also more environmentally friendly and mostly animal-free, because it's not completely animal-free, but mostly animal-free, it's a solution that the world needs. And I think we're still quite a long way off. I don't think it's going to be in the next 5 years that stuff will be on shelves, but I'm excited to see more of it.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fair enough. Ian, do you have an opinion on it that you'd like to share?
I think that the way that people eat food right now, the way that we produce the food is unsustainable and needs a bit of revitalization, a bit of modernization. And although like lab-grown meat seems like a really odd thing, it is right now, but in the future, people will look back at this time and go, that was absolutely necessary to sustain the world population, and to also reduce the effects of climate change. Because if you imagine how much land it takes and how much water it takes and how much feed it takes to grow one cow, and how many, the meager amount of meals you get out of one cow, then lab-grown stuff will probably play a really important role in our food system going forward.
Yeah, but no, thank you.
Worth mentioning, I don't think we would eat it. Like that, you know, I would rather get my meat from a soybean that's been turned into a burger rather than that process. But I think it's something the world needs.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I think you know, you did nominate kind of talk about the film that changed your life. And I think anybody out there that is questioning, well, I eat a lot of meat, you know, how bad is it? Then, you know, watch Cowspiracy, you know, fascinating film. Really, yeah, sure. Really, really educational, really inspiring. And it might just help you to cut meat out a little bit from your diet. And I think that's the key, isn't it? Is cutting out particularly, you know, massively produced factory farmed stuff. If you're going to eat meat, get a nice piece of organic from the local butcher or farm, and support your local community. As there's a mate of mine, we're gonna have to cut to another commercial break in just a minute now, but there's a mate of mine, every once a week they have a plant-based diet, and he ends up going to McDonald's and getting himself a plant-based Big Mac or whatever the alternative is. No, yeah, because he literally, like, he just misses meat. Anyway, we'll cut to the next commercial break. I'll come back to you in a second, guys. Thank you so much. Don't go away, everybody. We'll be back with Ian and Henry from Bosch in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Lean Into Clean, a Bank Holiday Monday special. I'm here with Ian Thiesby and Henry Firth from Bosch, the plant-based chefs. We are going to get into it now. So just before we do, Ian and Henry are very kindly committed, certainly for the foreseeable future, to offer some insight and some recipes and some, you know, just some plant-based news for our magazine, mygreenpod.com. So if you want to hear more about the guys, please do sign up at the website to the digital version of the magazine. You can also find Ian and Henry and Bosch, if you literally, I mean, put Bosch in, with an exclamation mark into Google, and you know, you can't avoid them. But Bosch.tv is your main handle, isn't it? For what's the best place for people to find you now? Because you went from Facebook, you're obviously massive on YouTube. I read somewhere that you had 3.6 billion views. I mean, that's just like mind-blowing. So where's the best place people can get hold of you?
Yeah, people can get to our website where basically all of our recipes are hosted. That's Bosch.tv. But if you want to sort of stay up to date with what's going on in the world of Bosch, head over to our Instagram, follow us on there, and that is Bosch.tv.
Bosch.tv, yeah, so that's easy. Okay, brilliant. So let's get into it. So, five books, the Times bestseller, all five of them. Well, I can't remember now exactly, but you've had the world's biggest plant-based selling book, haven't you? Which one was that?
That was the first, yeah. So Bosch was essentially, when we set out to write Bosch, we wanted to write a plant-based Bible. We wanted to basically fill a book full of all of the food that we used to love, but in a plant-based way, to make it as easy as possible for anybody to eat more plants. And that book obviously really resonated with people because we've sold, you know, almost 600,000 copies of it. It's the biggest selling plant-based cookbook in the world ever. And every single year, it was released 6 years ago. Yeah. When Christmas comes around, you look on Amazon and it goes from knocking around about like 1,000 out of all books to in the top 100 out of all books every single year for the past 6 years. So it's, yeah, we're really proud of that piece of work, and hopefully it will continue to live on.
And have you got books in the pipeline now? You working on anything right now?
Yes, we have actually. We've got a really, really nice concept that we've just sorted out. And I'll tell you right now, the concept is all around simple recipes that you cook in the midweek. Because what we found when the data we've commissioned is most people, when they buy a cookbook, they use it on the weekend. And what we want to do is give people a cookbook that they use during the week, so Monday to Friday. So it's full of really simple, really quick, really delicious, really nutritious recipes that will be perfect for a busy city person to cook. And that is basically an exclusive. So that will be hopefully dropping in January of next year.
Ah, how exciting. Thank you for giving us that bit of hot off the press news. How does it work? Are you published, or are you tied to publishers, or are you doing these yourself, or?
Well, we are lucky enough to be published, and our publisher has been HarperCollins. And yeah, they've been a great champion of ours over the course of the past few years. So that's great. But we've also got a couple of publishers that deal with the international publication of the work that we do too. But yeah, if anybody is thinking about doing a book or writing a book, if they didn't want to go to a publisher, we were chatting to the founder of a company called Unbound a few years ago, and he's got a great thing going on. So you can write your book, you can self-publish it, and they will deal with most of the heavy lifting. So Unbound, great.
Unbound, thank you for that. Thank you for that. There's a lot of you know, self-published books out there that do make it now, which is brilliant. But did you get, did they come to you then? I mean, presumably they were seeing that your influence was getting huge and just said, there's a book in these guys. Is that kind of how it worked? How did that feel for you two when that happened?
Well, so what we did was we're very, very active on social media, as you know, and we're also very active in our message boxes. So people who were watching our videos after maybe 6 months started asking us, are you ever going to do a cookbook? And initially we thought, oh, maybe one day we'll do a cookbook. But after reading the same thing maybe 1,000 times, we thought we're going to need to do a cookbook. So Henry and I spent a good amount of time. We took ourselves out of our normal days and we went out into the countryside and we just wrote a proposal. It was almost like we were trying to raise investment or something. And then we took it to many, many different publishers, and all of the publishers seemed very keen. So we had loads of meetings and HarperCollins proved to be the best.
Nice.
Because it wasn't a financial thing. It was more about their commitment to help us grow the brand because they were aligned with the mission. So it was really, really good.
Yeah, lovely. I think that's brilliant that you went with the alignment, and they are such a brilliant publishers. I mean, they've had some of the best, most world famous books out there, particularly in this kind of fact finding game. So, Henry, I want to come to you because firstly, I want to get your song that you've chosen. But before we do that, I know you said that your background was sales and marketing, and you were kind of used to creating content and everything else. So What's from a business perspective, and I'm sure you're both very much business minded, have you got anything bubbling in the pipeline? Is there like something that you haven't achieved yet that you'd like to, or you think that you think that could potentially be the next thing?
Yeah, I think that we would call ourselves a 360 brand, so a media brand that also has products. You know, Star Wars might be another example, or Mr. Beast, where you have, you know, media driving awareness, but then you have products that you can buy. So we just want our food in every supermarket in the UK. We want our food in supermarkets in the US as well. We just want to focus on English-speaking territories, really. So I'd say goal number one for us is continue to grow our social media channels. So continue to grow YouTube, continue to grow Facebook, Instagram, and all of those. And particularly with more of this long form content, more of this high value content of meaning in either cooking or talking, grow that media, but then also grow our product range. And we've got a great product range out there at the moment, but there are some much improved products coming soon. And I think that's the core of our focus. You know, the website is packed with recipes and always will be. It's free and it will most likely remain free for a fairly long time, if not forever. But that's ultimately where you can find Bosch and what we're focused on.
Yeah, nice. So what I'm hearing is there potentially is going to be some Bosch branded food idea concepts, products, I guess, in stores. I
mean, exactly. I mean, there are already. You can already buy our cakes.
Oh, there are already. Oh, I hadn't realised that. Okay, got it.
We're in pretty much every major supermarket, but we want more products in those supermarkets and maybe in restaurants too as well. That's another thing.
Got it. Thank you. And you did your TV. You had, was it the first plant-based TV show that ITV had done was you guys?
That's right. We had Living on the Veg, which was the first and only vegan cooking show on ITV. Almost the day it finished, lockdown began, and unfortunately we haven't done another one since. But we cook on TV all the time. We're working on a couple of new TV concepts at the moment, so watch this.
Yeah, we'll do. A very, very good friend of mine actually he's just set up his own production company backed by the BBC. They've just sold their first I'm not sure what they call it, but unscripted content. This is a game show. They've just sold it to Netflix, so they're in the process of that. So maybe I said hook you guys up. He's won awards for his creativity. They were involved in Love Island and, you know, some of the biggest TV shows ever. So yeah, let's have a chat offline about that. So Henry, let's play your song. So tell us the song that you've chosen, who it's by, and then at the end of the song, we probably won't be able to play it all because I think it's about 5 minutes long, but we'll play a good 3.5 minutes of it, and then you can tell us why you chose the song. So what song have you chosen?
Okay, so the song I've chosen is Leonard Cohen, The Legend, and Everybody Knows.
Everybody Knows, classic. Great, this is Leonard Cohen, Everybody Knows. Henry, I'm sorry to cut the song short. Such a beautiful, those dulcet tones of Leonard Cohen are just fantastic. Why did you choose that song, mate?
So, look, the brief was to think about a song which represents sustainability and the environment. And Leonard Cohen was obviously a legend. He was a poet. He was a revolutionary. He stood up for what he believed in, and he fought against the status quo with all of his lyrics, all of his actions, and all of his words outside of music. And obviously this song is peppered with imagery, which describes the world that we live in, you know, from the war is over, the good guys lost, old Black Joe's still picking cotton, the deal is rotten. You know, he describes really eloquently in this song just the doom and gloom that we're all facing. And that was his style. And I think we should, it's a shame there aren't more songs talking about the state of the planet, the sustainability climate crisis that we face, because we do need to fix it. And I find this song to be a call to arms for us all to get off our behinds and do something and try and improve this world.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. Well, look, guys, we're coming to the end of the show. These shows always just astound me how quickly they go, because we could talk for hours. I know we could.
Yes. And
hopefully this will just be the beginning. I'd like to have you back definitely when there's something relevant going on for you. One last question. Are you fathers by any chance? Do you have children in your lives? Yeah, yeah, Ian, you do.
Yes.
Both of you do. Okay, yeah, great.
Relatively okay. New dads. My baby is just 6 months old, so he's finding his crawling hands and feet, which is a scary prospect.
Magical time. Yes. Magical time.
Mine is about 1 year and 6 months old. So,
okay, great. Yeah. So they're both okay. So that's brilliant. So you're both young dads with two young children. Now, if you had a moment just to give them some wise words. Now's your moment. I want both of you to give us some wise words about what you do and why you do it, and how you would say it to your kids so that they can be educated by it, inspired.
Yeah, great question. And thank you for the opportunity. Humanity is a wonderful thing. People are beautiful creatures. Life is amazing. How amazing that we're here. And it's a shame that as part of that, we have got to this place where we're now destroying our planet and making it unsafe for future generations. There's a lot of things that are hard for us to fix, like what Leonard Cohen was singing about, business, governments. We can all fight those fights, but they're big and hard and slow. But the one fight that we can all fight every day is the fight between ourselves and our own personal carbon footprint. That doesn't mean it's your fault. It's not your fault that we're in this world, but we have the opportunity to fix it. So it's about 50% lower in carbon emissions if you choose a vegetarian or a vegan meal. So every time you sit down to eat, you are voting for how you want the world to eat, how you want the world to. So just eat more plants.
Yeah, brilliant. Love that. Love that. And Ian, we've got a minute left. Please close on your what you would say to your child.
Okay, I would say that it's very important for everybody to have a job so they can put a roof over their head, but also and clothes on their back and food on the table. But the best way to work, I believe, is in an altruistic way. So what we do is pragmatic altruism. So what we try and do is use our careers for the good of more than people, just ourselves, but more than just ourselves. So it's pragmatic altruism. So if you're going to do work, try and do work that benefits others, because you will find it really easy to get out of bed every single morning.
Ian and Henry, classic moments. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is Lean Into Clean.
Thank you.
We'll see you next Monday. Have a great bank holiday.
Nice one,
Jarvis.